Hey, Pam.
Hey, what's up?
It's, Howard might ask if you want it.
Dunder Mifflin, this is Pam. He's not in the office. Can I take a message? I will. You too. Sorry, what's up?
I just completely forgot what I was gonna say. It's so weird.
Okay. Well, if you think of it, I'll be here.
Okay.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again before we get into one of the most gut-wrenching losses for the Giants in recent memory, which says a lot, by the way. We got to take care of the housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Something tells me that we have a lot of either new listeners after the first 2 weeks of the season or a lot of listeners who got fed up with us over the last 2 seasons and are finally coming back. If my Twitter mentions are any indication, I believe that to be the case. But alas, here we are. Let me start off by saying 2 things. One, I'm Jewish. It was Yom Kippur. I came off a 24-hour fast to watch that fucking garbage. Number two, before we get into the game and breaking down everything that happened, I do want to take a moment, seriously, very seriously, well wishes to Nick Gates. Terrible injury. You hate to see it for a guy that is so well-liked on the team. Undrafted, still voted a captain, sees the starting job.
Easy to go.
And what? Yeah, exactly. A guy that you root for, a guy that well-loved by the team, the coaching staff. And one thing that I was actually thinking about last night in my misery and depression on the couch 4 bourbons deep was I cannot remember an injury to the Giants that hit me as hard since the Victor Cruz injury. Between the way that the game ended, like there are a few places or moments in Giants' recent memory that I remember as vividly as when Victor Cruz went down in the Eagles' end zone with the torn patellar tendon. Where, again, like the similarities, undrafted, seized the opportunity, loved by the fan base, loved by the team, the coaching staff, everything. For a guy like Nick Gates, who's willing to do literally whatever it takes to win, change positions, no question, learning new positions, going to bat and fighting on the field for his teammates, it's just, I haven't seen a replay, I don't want to see a replay, those type of injuries make me real queasy. Well wishes to Nick Gates. And, you know, I think that Giants fans can agree that there are a few players that they think will be able to make a comeback and just that dog mentality that he has. So it's tough. That's a tough injury, and we wish him well. All right. Well, that fucking sucked for a number of reasons. I don't even know where to start.
All the metaphors.
We can start with positives.
All the metaphors, all the hyperboles, all the simile. We've done it. We've used them all to describe this organization. I'm with you, man. Where do you start?
Start with the positives. Let's just start with the positives. Dan Jones
looked like a franchise quarterback.
I wouldn't go that far, but he played as well as you can expect him to play. When your quarterback plays a game as perfectly as he did, you cannot lose. You cannot lose those games. A lot of people, this is what sort of really, it's been annoying like the last 24 hours not even 24 hours. It's been, call it 16 hours. Dan Jones played a great game. Like, there's no taking anything away from that, but it's like one game like that, and fans just forget the last two seasons of what we've gone through, right? Like, I'm not willing to just turn around and be like, oh, you know, if the Giants have a top pick, we're not going to take a quarterback or anything like that. No, he absolutely deserves kudos. He played an incredible game. Like, round of applause to him, right? Like, there's that of all the things that could have, should have, were expected to go wrong yesterday, Dan Jones against that defensive line was probably number one in people's minds. He played very well. He played very well. People blaming him for overthrowing Slayton, shut up. That's as good a throw as you can make under that pressure, given the fact that he's wide open off of both hands, you know, tough. Dan Jones was awesome yesterday. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I when I said he looked like a franchise quarterback, that's not me saying that he is a franchise quarterback, but that type of performance are typically what you see from franchise quarterbacks. The offensive line was not good. They had its moments, but Daniel Jones made plays in with the pressure in his face. He used his legs. We saw that athleticism. We saw, you know, the deep ball accuracy. I mean, the guy really, really played well. He should have had, you know, over 300 yards passing and four total touchdowns. He played really, really well, man, and I think that, you know, everything that we talked about last week with the quarterback turning the ball over and the offensive coordinator being uber conservative, I thought that for the most part, the quarterback played very well and the offensive coordinator, to the standard that we hold him, was really good. Was he sufficient enough? No, but compared to what he's been since he's been the offensive coordinator here, this was probably one of his better games called. But nonetheless, you know, it's crazy. All week long we talk about it, right? We talked about it on the last podcast. The offense, the quarterback, the offensive coordinator. They come out, if I were to tell you on when was the last time we spoke? Monday, Tuesday?
Sure.
If I would have told you, hey, man, Daniel Jones is going to throw for 300 yards. He's going to rush for nearly 100 yards. He's going to have four touchdowns.
And the Giants put up 29 points.
The Giants scored 29 points. I mean, how many? Who would have said that the Giants were going to win this game? I think all of us. But, again, this game just shows that the problems of the Giants run a lot deeper than just the offense, the coordinator. It's tough, man. I'm really at a loss for words, but a positive is Daniel Jones for his performance.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see if he can do it again and play like this consistently.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And that was my point. Like, he did, you know, it's one game, but it's a step in the right direction. Let's see what we can do moving forward.
Yep.
I'm just so dejected. I don't even know where to go. Like, I feel like these are the type of episodes and these are the types of games that just embody everything that's been wrong with the Giants since even before 2018. Like, obviously 2018 is very symbolic of everything wrong with the organization.
This is a decade-long problem.
Of course it's a decade-long problem. Yeah. We got to talk about Joe Judge.
Yeah.
This guy comes in.
Yeah, I said last week the honeymoon phase is over.
Of course it's over. Yeah. This guy, though, it's like, again, this was the thing that I got a lot of shit for early in his tenure, like in training camp, the whole running laps, the whole diving in mud during practice for the balls. Like, all right, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I understand you're trying to put your own Belichickian spin on your tenure as Giants coach, but you need to put up or shut up. The games that they won last year, congratulations. You did it against the backup quarterbacks of the league, some real, like, dog shit level competition. And now you've been given a fresh start. You have, thankfully, listen, for all of John Mara's faults, opening up the pocketbook is not one of them. No. The man will spend. He'll rarely spend the right way, but he'll spend.
Yeah.
Right? He opened up the pocketbook this offseason. He gave you weapons that all of us believed you, Joe Judge, had significant influence on. You spent 2 days meeting with Kenny Golladay to make sure that he would be a fit in this scheme. Okay? You were in the war room saying, yeah, let's trade back. Jason Garrett and I could really use Kadarius Toney. You were, like, all of these decisions add up. And it's just the philosophy. It's the lack of aggression when it matters. It's the preaching discipline and then having an undisciplined team on the football field. And I know that the argument goes, what is he going to do? He's not on the field. He can't get his players to go offsides. I get it. I get it. But this goes back to, like, the Coughlin era. Like, when it was very obvious towards the end that he was losing the team and they were just – the clock management was awful, both on the sidelines and by the quarterback. He had players taking stupid penalties, and we're already seeing that. We're seeing both of those things early in Joe Judge's tenure, and it's not good, all right? And I'm not just talking about the Dexter Lawrence offsides, which we need to talk about it, and we will. Okay, it's the back-to-back false starts. It's coming out of a timeout to take a delay of game and then take a sack, which puts you out of field goal range for your fucking best kicker that this team has had in franchise history, by the way. It's getting a miraculous interception deep in your opponent's territory, knowing that your opponent has 2 timeouts or 3 timeouts and a 2-minute warning. And knowing that the drive before, Taylor Heinicke went right into the red zone in literally 2 minutes. Everybody that was sitting on their couch watching knew that if the Giants didn't get a first down during that series, there was a very good chance that they were going to somehow lose that game based on how the defense was playing, the lack of aggression on defense all game, the lack of aggression on offense for a majority of the game. There's moments like that. We spoke about it last week. The Giants had 4 or 5 opportunities throughout the course of the game. I'm going to quote you from last week. Momentum. There are opportunities throughout the game to seize momentum. Not going for it on 4th and 2 or 4th and 3 and settling for that field goal. I texted you immediately after. I said, they're going to regret that. Look who regretted it. The Giants. The philosophy is so fucking conservative sometimes, it blows your mind.
Playing not to lose.
They play not to lose. They can't do that. They, as a football team, as a coaching staff, have so many holes that your margin of error for any game is 0. And that margin of error includes errors by the referee. You at no point, and this goes for most teams, but the Giants especially, cannot leave the fate of the game up to the officiating. And even though that holding call on CJ Board was bullshit, you were still in the red zone.
Yes.
On a defense that was surprisingly bad that evening. Okay? Anytime Dan Jones kept the ball and ran, it made Chase Young look like he had the IQ of a squirrel.
Yeah.
That man could not figure it out. You're in the red zone. 7. You need 7. You cannot settle for fucking field goals in this league. And the Giants did it repeatedly last night. And even when they had the opportunity, like, okay, well, like the third and long, like the 37, shoot themselves in the foot. Get themselves out of field goal range. It's maddening.
Yeah, I think there's two. The one thing I think coming into the season that I thought I didn't have to worry about was discipline. I thought the team, based on what I thought I knew about Joe Judge, would be, this team would be disciplined. It would be prepared. It would have, pay attention to detail. And even in week one, we saw a lot of the undisciplined.
And not to cut you off, just like I need to go back to the delay of game out of a timeout.
Yeah, that's bad.
It is the most egregious penalty you can take as a football team.
Yeah.
Because you know what? If your team's on defense or whatever it is, and the opposing offense is going no huddle, they're going quick, like, yeah, like things get discombobulated, substitutions can get messed up, you can jump off sides, a lot of things can happen. The one thing on the offensive side of the ball that you cannot afford is to be unprepared after having a few minutes to prepare, yes, for a play. That right there is how coaching can affect the whole discipline thing.
Right.
Right? Like, sure, right. Dexter Lawrence goes offside. We'll talk about it. Joe Judge can't control that. There are other moments in the game that coaching can directly influence the discipline of the players.
Yeah. I mean, that to me, that was very embarrassing for them to go from 3rd-and-2 to 4th-and-11 because – and burn a timeout. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, you expect this – my expectation was the one thing I knew I didn't have to worry about with a Joe Judge coach team would be discipline and attention to detail and being prepared. And the Giants weren't that. I think Joe Thomas, and I put this out last night, Joe Thomas really put it really well when he talked about pre-snap penalties. Those are signs of a team that's not prepared, that's undisciplined. When you're committing pre-snap penalties, it's one thing to grab a face mask or to hold during a play or a block in the back. You know, those things are different. But when you're committing pre-snap penalties, that just shows you that you're not prepared. You're not paying attention. And I think that's an indictment on the coaching staff. And I think we saw that yesterday a lot. And it was really a continuation from week one. Because week one, we saw a lot of these things too. The problem is we didn't pay a lot of attention to it because the Giants were not really in that game. Yesterday, in key spots, we saw the Giants, you know, have those moments. And you know, that final drive, people point to the Dexter Lawrence offsides. Lorenzo Carter jumped offsides, I think, 2-3 plays earlier and gave them a free 5 yards. Those type of things can't happen, you know. And look, I mean, this is what we talked about, right? I mean, we can talk about the conservativeness, but we thought that this team was going to be disciplined. And I'm going to say this, but I want to preface that I'm not making a comparison from person to person. But watching last night's game and all the penalties and all the mental errors, it reminded me of watching the Giants in the second year of Ben McAdoo, where I remember watching that year where there was so many times where you were just like, this team is not disciplined. Like, they're not prepared. Like, you're wondering, like, what do you practice? What have you been doing during the offseason? And again, I want to preface, I'm not comparing the two head coaches. I'm just saying what last night resembled was something that I've seen before. And I got to tell you, man, I'm worried as a fan because, you know, I'm not saying Joe Judge deserves to lose his job. I'm not going there yet. But you got to be thinking in the back of your mind, like, okay, like, how many more games are we going to keep seeing? How many more times are we going to keep seeing these types of mental mistakes from the Giants before we're like, we have to seriously like ask that question, like, okay, is this guy the right person for the job? So it's alarming, man. It's alarming.
But it's not just that, because it's a good point, right? It's not a comparison of them as coaches. It's it's the similarities.
Yeah.
It's like, it's 2016 to 2017 all over again in my head. like probably, the similar.
Ben McAdoo won 11 games in his first year.
Right. Right. And Joe, and but people were feeling nice and peachy last year, right, because Joe Judge was starting to win some games.
Right.
Even, you know, regardless of the competition level, which, again, argument for another time. Point being, we've spoken about this a million times. This season can get out of hand really fucking quickly. And it's not all Joe Judge's fault, okay? I feel like I'm a broken record. The fish rots from the head down. The owner's complete inability, fucking aptitude. The guy's a fucking moron, okay? His inability to say, you know what? This isn't working. I need to hit the reset button. And not just on the coach, not just on the GM, literally my entire front office. My brother is a fucking idiot scumbag. He's getting his responsibilities taken away, okay? Dave Gettleman, he's a fucking idiot. He's getting his responsibilities taken away. Ernie Accorsi, thank you for what you've done. I don't need to consult you on my next move. You're, get the hell out of here, okay? It's everything. And we did this when Coughlin was gone, and then Reese was gone, and then Gettleman's brought in, and McAdoo's brought in, and then fired, and then Shermer's brought in. Nothing matches. Hit the fucking reset button. Because this is only Joe Judge's second season. And forget about the criticisms, if you like them, if you don't like them. It's an, again, it's just so eerily similar to the Pat Shermer situation, where he is put in a position where he cannot win. The roster is incomplete. The cap space is a fucking disaster. They're not sure if they have a franchise quarterback yet. The GM was on the hot seat before they even hired Judge.
Yeah.
And the first two games of the season were probably the most winnable of this entire stretch. We spoke about it.
Yeah.
They need to win at home against fucking Teddy Bridgewater. They need to go into Washington, which Daniel Jones has dominated, regardless of who's playing quarterback for them. And they need to start 2-0. Because now they have 10 days off before they face the 2018 Giants and the 2021 Atlanta Falcons at home on Eli Day. And after that, it's like a murderer's row of three teams. And the worst part is, like, even watching yesterday's performance, I'm confident that the Falcons are so bad. Like, they're really bad. Like, that defense sucks. I know you and I don't see eye to eye on Matt Ryan. Like, I understand Calvin Ridley can do 10 times as much damage as Terry McLaurin did last night. But, like, that's a bad football team. Like, poorly managed, poorly run, like what we're looking at. And I'm thinking to myself, it's Eli Day. They got 10 days to prepare. Like, they'll roll through them. They're 1.5-point favorites at home, which means on a neutral field, by Vegas standards, they're fucking underdogs to the Atlanta Falcons. That's how little respect the odds makers, who are smarter than everyone, are giving the Giants. So if they don't win against the Falcons, then who? I forget the exact order of the schedule. I know they got the Rams at home. Then they have to go to, then they got the Cowboys.
They got Carolina in there, and they got
Carolina's like the fourth game.
Yeah,
I think, or not the fourth game. The fourth game after the Falcons.
Yeah, they got a tough stretch coming up, and.
And it's an impossible position for Joe Judge. Like, yeah. I hate the conservativeness. I hate the play calling. I really don't like a lot of his staff. I don't like a lot of the decision making. But, like, we're doing this again. We have to have a conversation about the head coach for the third time in how many years we've been doing this podcast. It's absurd.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
I think let's rewind a little bit, right?
Please, I went off on a little.
I don't even want to think about Atlanta right now. Okay, when the game finished, right? I was watching the game last night with my brother-in-law and my brother. My brother-in-law is a Giant fan, and my brother, he's a Baltimore Ravens fan. I'm watching the game with him, and when the game finished, you know, they all left, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at the TV screen, and I'm just wondering, like, what, like, why does this keep happening? Like this is not, like, every year there's a type of game like this, right, that we go through where a kicker makes a fucking 70-yard field goal to beat us.
Yep.
Or, you know, some backup quarterback leads a game-winning drive, or, you know, yep. a receiver drops a ball and like I feel like I every year we seem like it can't get worse than this, and then it does, right? And so like I'm sitting there, I'm like, and the conclusion that I come to is, and I'm dead serious about this, the Giants are fundamentally broken. I've put that out there, but I don't know how you fix it. Like, I don't know if it's as simple as the owner cleaning house, because the owner is the same person that hired these people that we've seen the past decade. He's the one that's kept a GM on board, but fired the coach, fired the GM, brought on a new GM. Like, he's the guy that has been making this these decisions for the past decade. So for me to say, well, if we clean house, we're going to be okay, I don't know that. You know, this is really the first time, and this is why I think I'm so, like, as a fan of the Giants, I truly feel so hopeless, because a part of me says, you know what, they could go on a 4-game, 5-game winning streak, but don't worry, they will eventually break your heart. They'll suck you right back in, and they'll break your heart, or they're just going to continue to lose the rest of the season. Like, understand, like, this is the second week of the season. Like, there's still 15 more games to go.
Oh, I know. I'm well aware.
Like,
but you know what? Let me count. I'll counter your thinking, though. It's like, I get it. There is zero faith in ownership to actually do the right thing. But are we going to just keep doing this?
No. I'm not advocating to just keep doing this. I'm like, hear me out.
I understand. My point, I understand your point. Yeah. You're saying that there's no, like we can't keep doing this, but also there is no faith in ownership to keep doing the right thing. But right. You know what? Even when Kobe is 0-for-30, he keeps shooting. Yes. You got to keep shooting.
Unfortunately, I don't think John Mara is Kobe.
No.
To me, it's like I've asked this question, and people have said, well, maybe he should, you know, John Mara should take the type of role that Steve Tisch has, where he's not as hands-on, and he brings in an outside guy to run the football operations. And maybe that makes sense. But guess what? He's hiring that guy. So everything always goes back to who John Mara brings in. And I'm reminded that I just have no faith. Like, that's why, like, I'm being dead serious. Like, we can sit here, right? We can talk about, you know, the defense, and they sucked, and James Bradberry, you know, was torched all night. Like, we can sit here and talk about individual performances and break this down and talk about Atlanta and that. But here's the thing, like, as a fan, I'm genuinely feel like I'm in a very dark place, and I don't know how I'm going to get out of this, because it's like, I'm telling you right now, right? Like, I can envision a scenario where the Giants either bomb out the season and go 2-15. But I could also see a scenario where they win a lot more games than you and I think they will today, and be in contention for the playoffs, and then break our hearts right where it matters most. Because I'm so, like, I can't even explain it. Like, I'm at a point where it's like, I'm either preparing myself to not care about the Giants by the first day of fall, or I feel like I'm going to be in a position where I'm forced to buy back in just to have my heart broken again.
Like, well, that was last year. You know? Yeah, that was last year.
So, like, it's almost like I really have no answer. I don't know how this gets fixed. Maybe we should just hope to get lucky. You know, like maybe
I think that's it.
Like, you just hope to get lucky with the GM or with the quarterback, and maybe that's what we have to hope for. But in terms of, like, confidence, like, nobody should have any confidence that this organization is going to figure it out. Will we be happy if they clean house? Yeah, obviously. They should have never hired this GM. This is a GM that should have never been hired in the first place. The only reason he was hired was because the owner was comfortable with him. He did not have the resume to be the GM of this team. He was an abomination in Carolina, and he came here, and in 4 years he's been a total disaster. The Chiefs played in a Super Bowl, saw their quarterback, who they're paying a lot of money to, get destroyed, and went into the offseason and said, this will never happen again under our watch. And what did they do? They went and they fixed it. Did they have top five picks for four straight years to draft linemen? No, but they still fixed it. It's been 4 years, and we're over here hoping that this player steps up. Oh, this guy that we signed off the street is good. Oh, they're trying to fix the offensive line by picking up guys off the street during 53-man cuts. Like, this is ridiculous, man. Like, this has gone on for way too long, and I am going to be the happiest man when this general manager is fired. But big picture stuff, I don't have confidence that this is going to get fixed. That's why, like, it's not even worth being mad at the general manager, because it's like, really, he's just like a dead man walking right now. Like, if this team is bad, he's gone. But the real, you know, problem and the real sense of hopelessness for me comes to the fact that I don't think this owner can fix this. I don't think he can hire the right person. And I'm left hoping, like, maybe we can luck into something. Maybe we can luck into the Patrick Mahomes of GMs. I don't know. But
I started my Mike Borgonzi campaign.
I don't know.
Last year.
People will throw names out. This is the GM. This is the head coach. But it's so much bigger than that. And it's just, it's brutal, because I'm sitting there last night looking at the TV and I'm thinking to myself, there's 15 more games left. They have 15 more opportunities to break your heart, to make you feel like how you're feeling right now.
Yeah.
So we can talk about, you know, oh, the defense. Why did the defense struggle? Okay, go ahead. Fire Patrick Graham. If that makes you feel better, go ahead.
Defense struggled because who have they drafted that's actually good the last 4 years?
Name a pass rusher.
That's who have they drafted? Seriously, who have they drafted the last 4 years where you're like, as an opposing offensive coordinator, you're like, that guy scares the fucking shit out of me.
Who is the best defensive player they've drafted? No. Let's answer that question.
Dexter Lawrence. That's the answer.
A very limited but good player. Not a game-changing player.
Shades of 2017, man. It's overpaying fucking Leonard Williams, who has been invisible so far with the exception of, like, one or two almosts. It's been Bradbury, who very predictably hasn't lived up to that contract for the second year in a row. No one expected regression this bad. But, like, to be as bad as he has been is just utterly unacceptable. Blake Martinez, hello, can you make a fucking play, or are you too busy trading Pokemon cards in your spare time, you overpaid bum? Okay, these are three guys who last year, like, I think we were on board with the Bradbury signing, right? I don't think it was like a massive overpay, but like, you expected this guy, given how much he's being paid, to not be targeted by opposing quarterbacks, and the wide receiver going 6 for 7 with a passer rating for the QB of 144. I don't know what it was in week two, but that's what it was in week one. And besides the interception last week, he looked lost. Okay? Same thing with Leonard Williams. The trade was an abomination. I was never on board with extending him for that much money because he's not the edge rusher that this team needs. That's going to be an abomination, and it's going to be a pain in the ass for the next GM to deal with. Blake Martinez, I think we were all against that signing. And again, another guy who overperformed last year, who's been invisible this season. So it's like, in terms of who they've drafted, DeAndre Baker, not on the fucking team anymore. Xavier McKinney, still we don't know because he was injured his entire rookie season. Dexter Lawrence, he is a nose tackle. Holla fucking Louie. Lorenzo Carter, like, every game, like, there's one flash, and that's about it. Aziz Ojulari, outside of his opening sack from the first series, Pro Football Focus ranked him, like, horrendously. I don't remember what the exact
Second round rookie.
But again, like, I'm not expecting anything. But it's like, they make the same mistakes. They can't draft. They go out. They get these overpriced free agents, and then they're stuck with these abomination contracts. When, hello, you don't have a foundation. The whole point of the rookie quarterback window, which of course Dave fucking Gettleman doesn't believe in because he's a moron, is that you have a cheap stud quarterback that you can draft well around him, right? You draft the rookie quarterback, and you get, like, a couple good offensive linemen in place, and you draft, like, a few second- or third-round receivers, and then you say, okay, well, what else do we need to go out and get? Oh, like, We have a lot of cap space because we appropriately manage this. Let's go out and get the best pass rusher in this free agent class. Let's go out there and get that lockdown corner that we've been missing. The Giants do everything ass backwards. They go out there, they draft poorly, they think that they can coach these guys up when they can't because the talent just isn't there, and then they go out and overpay for these free agents whose contracts look even worse than they are because there is no organic talent to supplement them. It's insanity.
I'm going to share something with you. These are facts and analysis. Dave Gettleman puts an emphasis on stopping the run. That's why he goes and pays Leonard Williams all that money. That's why he goes and drafts 87 different defensive tackles a year. Week one, the Denver Broncos threw the ball 36 times. The Giants didn't sack Teddy Bridgewater one time. Yesterday they sacked Taylor Heinicke one time, and he dropped back to throw 46 times. When you are using high draft picks on guys that strength are stopping the run, but they are not good at pass rush, you're essentially making them, you're minimizing their ability to play to their strengths because they're not able to rush the passer. 46 times Taylor Heinicke dropped back to pass. On those 46 plays, Dexter Lawrence was not able to play to his strength. They ran 69 plays, did the Washington football team. They ran the ball, bear with me, 22 times. So on 22 plays, Dexter Lawrence was valuable. On 46 plays, he was marginalized. You don't use a first-round pick on a player that's only good for 30% of the team snaps. And the other 60% or 70%, you know, he's not played to his strengths. Like, does that make sense? Like, that's about value. You know, like, you don't... Like, this is what I don't understand is, like, we talk about Dexter Lawrence like he's this great player. He's good at stopping the run. Unfortunately, the NFL is a passing league.
You know who's good at drafting defensive tackles at a position of value?
Jerry Reese, right?
Yeah.
He didn't use first-round picks on them.
No, he hit home runs on multiple second-round defensive tackles. Used them and said, thank you for your service. You can go get paid elsewhere. I'll go draft another one of you.
No, like, my thing is people throw around Dexter Lawrence like it's, like, the greatest thing. Dexter Lawrence, great at stopping the run. But guess what? This is a passing league. It really, like, okay, he's good on 30% of the team's plays. What about the other 70%? Like, this is about value. Like, oh my God. I couldn't even put it into words.
The Giants ran the ball 8 times.
Saquon Barkley, he's a new tiptoe.
How many yards did they get? Giants ran the ball 8 times, first and 10. How many yards total did they get?
Probably in single digits.
1. Not average of 1. 1 total. I'll repeat that. The New York Giants ran the ball 8 times on 1st and 10 against the Washington football team. They totaled 1 yard.
Saquon had 13 carries for 57 yards. The long was 41. That means he had 1 carry for 41 yards and 12 carries for 16 yards.
Yes, that is correct.
And Dave Gettleman in 2018, after drafting him, I'll never forget this, stood up there and said, this guy makes your quarterback better. He's a five-tool player. He makes your quarterback better. I'll never forget this. He makes your offensive line better. He makes your defense better. He makes your coach better. I mean, he...
It's sad.
It is very sad.
It's sad. I was having this debate earlier with a Penn State fan.
Yeah.
Who is he's a Jets fan. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they all those Penn State fans have a soft spot for Saquon.
Yeah, of course.
You know, it's not... It's true. A lot of this is not Saquon's fault.
Absolutely not.
He did not ask to get drafted second overall, although I'm sure he loved it, of course. He did not ask to have Jason Garrett as his coordinator. He did not ask to have this line blocking for him. Fact remains, he has been incredibly underwhelming since his rookie season.
He is not a generational back.
He's a complete liability in pass protection. But he also has not made the most out of a lot of the opportunities given to him. We've seen guys like Wayne Gallman, Alfred Morris, be able to move the chains behind similar offensive lines. Like, it's... Yeah, like, the line's not good. But you got to make the most of these opportunities. Like, you can't be getting no yards.
Right.
Like, that's impossible. Even when it is totally obvious that Jason Garrett is running the ball, you have to be able to pick up 2 yards, 3 yards. Like, what are we doing here?
It's crazy how much they played into what. After that Bradberry pick, I mean, how are you not aggressive there? Your quarterback has been lighting them up. Your offensive line is holding
shredding up. Shredding them on the ground. Dan Jones was shredding them on the ground.
Yes. How do you not... Like, you come out... Like, here's the thing, right? Like, think about this for a second. They have 3 timeouts plus the 2-minute warning. If you run, they're going to call a timeout, right? Regardless what you do, they're going to get the ball back.
With plenty of time.
They ran 3 plays and took like 12 seconds off the clock because they had timeouts.
Yes.
Washington had timeouts. Come out, you throw on first down, even if you get 3-4 yards, they're going to take a timeout anyway. Set yourself up on second down where you have an open playbook where it's 2nd and 4 and you can run the ball then. Or you can, again, throw the ball. All you needed was 1 first down.
Yes.
Like, play to your strengths. Know your surroundings. Your quarterback is literally having...
That's a good point. And it's a great point. You don't need a touchdown.
No.
You need a first down. There were points in the game where they were in similar territory or maybe even a little farther back where they settled for 3 where, like, yeah, they probably really could have used a touchdown then. But at that point in the game, you literally just needed a first down.
That's it. You get a first down. At best, Washington's not getting the ball with no more than probably like 30 seconds and no timeouts.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that's all you needed to do. I don't know, man. It's like I said, it's a fundamentally broken organization. You can't just point to one thing. Like, it's like a laundry list of embarrassing things with this team. It's only week 2, man.
It's only week 2.
We still got
want to talk about Dexter Lawrence? Let's talk about Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah. Can I start
you
with
may.
This?
You may.
It's every time I look at it, I've gone back and forth. Yeah, I've gone back
times.
And forth
a million times.
I'm trying to not sound like I don't think it was offsides. I think he read the snap perfectly, but I mean I think the hesitation where he had that hesitation might have sold the offsides, but it's so close that I don't know.
I mean, here's the thing, and this I think Aaron is a listener of the pod. He tweeted this at me, and I think it couldn't be more perfectly put. Truth is that live, it looks like an automatic offsides. If in super slow motion, we can't tell, I can't expect the refs to not call that. think that's it. I think that that's what it boils down to. If you and I, after the fact, are looking at multiple angles in slow motion, and even then we're not sure, I mean, who knows?
Well, if you look at the play, the sideline judge, right, he's looking at the ball and he's looking at the line, the defense, the offensive and defensive line. What happens is the center, I've really dissected this, picks the ball up.
Yeah, picks the ball up.
As he's ready to snap it.
Which he can do.
Right. As he picks it up, you see almost simultaneously Dexter Lawrence lunge forward.
Yes.
There's like a split second where Dexter Lawrence lunges forward, then stops. The ball has not been like out of the long snapper's hands. And I think that's what the ref saw and he threw the flag. I mean, it's really like a split second decision. If you're looking at it from the sideline, I can see where the ref saw the Dexter Lawrence sort of move forward and not see the ball being snapped, and that's why he threw the flag. Nonetheless, I mean, it's so close.
I mean, there was one, again, like there's one video going around, and if you're listening to this, you've probably seen it a million times. It shows two different angles of the play. There's one that looks so obviously offsides. And then there's the angle that's higher up, closer to Dexter Lawrence. You can clearly see the center or the long snapper with the ball. And that's the one that looks really close. Again, if we can't tell on slow-mo replay with multiple angles, I can't expect the refs to, you know, in real time. That's tough. That said, fuck this refereeing crew.
It was terrible.
Michael Lombardi tweeted that I think week one this crew had 26 flags. This week they had 20. Stop making it about yourselves. Stop making these ticky-tacky calls and let the boys play.
That holding on CJ board, that was not a hold. That is a really, really
awful call. Awful call. But again, this goes back to, I think we discussed this in the beginning, the margin of error for this team is so small that you cannot leave the game in the hands of the officiating. And
can I give you a perfect example? Can I give you a perfect example of that?
Let me just say one thing real quick. To still have that hold against CJ board called and still have incredible field position and only take three there, that's egregious.
Here's a perfect example of the margin of error. Washington, I don't know, there was a play where the running back tripped, but then like rolled
McKissick
over. Yeah, to get a first down.
That was awful.
That was awful, right? But guess what? They still converted a first down on that.
Exactly.
So they overcame the referee's mistake. The Giants
never do
overcome the referee's mistake, and it cost them. And it is, I'm telling you, man, it is brutal right now. And I keep reminding myself that, dude, you got 15 more games of this.
Yeah, and it's, I do. Part of me feels bad for Dexter Lawrence because what was it? It was a 48-yard field goal where he went offside. That's like, you know, if it's like 55, right, then it's like, I'm not even going to try to block that. 48, that's like at the range, like, yeah, like most kickers will hit that. Varies based on the kicker, and a lot of the mental stuff goes into that, being a game-winning kick, and it's not a short distance or a chip by any means. Like, I don't fault him at all for trying to get pressure quickly up the middle to try to get a hand on it. I don't. It's
last
tough.
Time,
it's tough.
Last time the New York Giants had a winning record at any point in the season, Barack Obama was the president. That is true.
That is...
Well, still in office.
Now two administrations ago. Yeah.
Well, one, depending on who you ask.
That's good. That's fine.
Kadarius Toney.
Oh, bro.
I have a problem with people calling him a bust. We've yet to see this guy on the field. How can you call him a bust? They're not using him. What is the... Like, I seriously... like.
That goes back to earlier. They're in the war room. It's Joe Judge. It's Gettleman. It's Abrams. It's Garrett. They're all sitting there saying, we're going to trade back, and we have to have guys in that range that we think will be there that we're very comfortable with and that we know can thrive in this offense.
And that we know how to use. We have a spot
and we
for
are
them
yet
on our
to
offense.
See, we are yet to see them prove that they know how to use him.
They're using him like he's Darius Slayton. He just runs go routes on the outside.
Using him like Tavon Austin.
You want to know how not to use Kadarius Toney? line them out wide and just have them run go routes. That's exactly how you not use Kadarius Toney. Have you seen Kadarius Toney in the backfield one time in two games?
I feel like I have.
And Saquon. Him and Saquon.
Oh, motion, but not like, yeah.
Like, not line up as an H-back right with Saquon and them running out of the backfield. Have you seen that yet?
No.
One time?
No.
That's like the easiest thing to do, right? Like, oh, man. You want to get to questions?
Not really. But yeah, I guess. You want to, here, I'll pull it up. You, go ahead.
Okay.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, there's nothing else I want to talk about with this team. It just gets me more depressed.
Can we talk about the overreactions to Kenny Golladay?
Oh, my
God. Yelling at the coaching staff?
I have a serious problem with a lot of people that are covering this team.
Fuck Pat Leonard. Oh, well, I know the other person that you're talking about. But for now, like, Pat Leonard's a clown. You see my quote tweet? You see my quote tweet?
I did.
Clown behavior.
You know what? The thing is that, and I told you this in private, but and I want to say this to fans who sort of react to people that are covering the team. When you're a writer, and I'm going to be straightforward about it. When you're covering a team, when you're a writer, when you're a blogger or reporter, I don't know what you call them, beat writer, and you're not getting a lot of traction on the team and you're not as well connected as you are, and the stuff you put out isn't getting the sort of reaction from fans that you will, they're not interested in you, you have to resort to saying outlandish stuff that doesn't make any sense, because your only hope is, hey, let me get
I'll call
a
it
rise.
Bait.
Yes, you have to bait certain fans into responding to you or clicking on something that you write because it's so outlandish that they have to see or they have to respond. That's what a lot of or a couple of people that are covering the Giants have resorted to. And as a fan, if you want it to stop, you should stop responding to it. I'm not going to mention names. I think people can figure it out on themselves. Pat Leonard's very open about it. Apparently, I mean, he doesn't care. But there are things that I see, and I'm like, this dude just has no idea what the fuck he's talking about, and he's just saying things just to get a rise out of the certain portion of the fan base that will respond.
And then play victim.
And then play. Well, yes. Yeah. So, listen, the team is bad. The interest level is only going to get worse. The outlandish stuff coming from people is only going to get worse. You just have to keep scrolling.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree with you. That was insane. And by the way, he wasn't even yelling at Daniel Jones. He was actually...
No.
In the direction of Jason Garrett. Maybe there was a another coach, but Daniel Jones got to that seat on the bench while Kenny Golladay was going off, and it seemed like Daniel Jones actually was not the person that was getting yelled at. He was actually someone that just responded back to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I still love Kenny Golladay, by the way.
Me too. Find something the New York media loves more than stirring up controversy about receivers who just want to win.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Why take Toney over a franchise tackle on Slater if we aren't going to use him?
They did not take Toney over Slater. They trade. This is pisses me off so much when I see this. They traded back in the first round. You wouldn't have a first round pick if you took Slater. Like, you can say, why did we trade back when we could have taken a franchise tackle on Slater, and we can discuss that. But they did not draft Kadarius Toney over Rashawn Slater. They traded back in the first round, got a first round pick of a team that, quite frankly, could be really bad this year, and then took Kadarius Toney at 20.
Yes.
Like, I hate when I see that. We could have had a franchise left tackle.
But it's obvious. It's obvious. They traded back as an insurance policy for Dan Jones.
Yeah, sure. Whatever reason they traded back for, I don't care. But like I hate when I see this, and this is part of what I see from certain people that write for the Giants too. They could have had Rashawn Slater. Yeah, but guess what? They wouldn't have had the Bears first round pick. So what do you want? Do you want the Bears first round pick or do you want Rashawn Slater? I personally would take my chances with the Bears first round pick, who could very well be a top 10 pick, maybe even top 5. Hey, maybe the Giants have two first round picks. Maybe they have pick 1 and 2, who knows.
Two top 5 picks, not two firsts. That's a given. From Ben. With the play calling on the Giants last drive after the interception, do you blame Jason Garrett for the decision making on choosing the plays?
No.
Or Joe Judge? I blame Joe Judge.
You're the head football coach. If you turn to Jason Garrett and say, let's be aggressive here.
Exactly. And that's what I don't get. I think, like, sure. So when people have the conversation, and this is something that I don't fully subscribe to. Oh, he's not a good head coach, but he's a good offensive coordinator. I don't fully subscribe to that. I'm sorry, but I don't. Because as a head coach, you have the ability to override everyone on your staff. If you don't like what Jason Garrett's doing, you tell him to do something else.
Or you fire him,
you grab the play sheet away from him, you call the plays, you grab the play sheet away from him, you give it to Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah. Point being, okay? It's your call.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think people, here's the thing.
Garrett's scheme stinks.
Yes.
But Joe Judge can override him.
Yes. And here's the thing. I don't mean to sound like I'm supporting anyone, but we talk about the offseason, we talk about, you know, Joe Judge's influence. If he has influence in drafting a player and trading back to pick up, you know, to get extra draft picks, you don't think he has control over his coaching staff?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy that we heard people can't even look at the wrong way in the Giants building. That's how much influence he has. You're telling me Jason Garrett, the offensive coordinator? This is the NFL, right? He's the head coach. You're responsible for the coaching staff. So yes, it's on Joe Judge. You are the head coach. Man.
This is sort of a, I mean, we should discuss this, but do you think they should move Peppers to linebacker? I don't necessarily know if they should do that. We need to talk about Jabril Peppers' usage. And I'll say this.
Another limited player.
Yes.
I mean,
but a guy that Dave Gettleman touted as another first rounder.
Yes. Talk about clueless.
And you know what's going to happen if the Giants are 1-5, 1-6, he's going to be on the trade block. And you have a disgruntled former first-round pick in a contract year who you touted as a first-round pick when you made that trade. And guess what they're going to get back from at the deadline? Conditional fifth, fourth?
Sixth?
Yeah.
Fourth, hell no.
Conditional. If he re-signs, it's a fourth. If not, maybe a fifth. We're in the ballpark. Who cares? Fact of the matter is, it's egregious.
And the thing was, I mean, that was so blasphemous when he said that. The Giants got a first-round pick in Billy Price for B.J. Hill. Like, do you see how egregious that sounds? Like, this man really stood up there and said some of the most nonsensical things, and people were like, yeah, he's right. First round pick. No. Jabril Peppers alone would not garner a first round pick. But in terms of his him playing, I think he's a limited player, struggles in when it's a passing play, and I think he's somebody you can only bring in when the team's running. And that's the reality of the situation.
Okay. From our good friend Monty, who is the best coach on this staff?
I'm going to stick with Joe Judge. I can't.
Really?
Yeah. Here's
why. Not Patrick Graham.
No.
And again, this is like being the tallest midget in the room.
Yeah. The reason why I would still say Joe Judge is because last year, I saw the team get better week to week, and they didn't have talent, but I saw them week to week get better, play hard, and that's why I think I'm not ready to give up on them in that. But and Patrick Graham is a close second. But the thing with Patrick Graham is the head coach hired him, and part of being a good head coach is being able to put together a staff. So that's why I think the better coach on this staff is still Joe Judge.
All right. I think that's too high level of a way of looking at it, but if that's how you want to spin it, be my guest.
Yeah. What do you think the record has to be for DG Dave Gettleman to be fired midseason? They're not firing a GM midseason.
No. They're going to turtle and just refuse to speak to the media until after the
Unless season. They do something to Eli Manning. Then they'll fire him midseason.
If Dave Gettleman goes streaking on the field during Eli's ceremony,
yeah,
that's what it would take to get him fired midseason. Yes.
Then he'll get fired.
Yes.
When will it end? I don't know. That's the scary part. I don't know. Where do we go from here?
Don't know.
I don't know. You tell me where to go. I'm right behind you.
If I had the answers, I'd be a GM.
Yes.
I'm a podcaster.
I know you don't believe Daniel Jones is a franchise quarterback, but is there anything he showed you last night that he could maybe build upon through the season to change your mind?
Yeah, definitely.
Don't turn the ball over. Make plays, step up in the pocket, make throws.
Use your legs.
Use your legs. There you go.
The word out of the press conference was that play to Slayton was Dan Jones audible. So
there you go. Awesome. In the likelihood the Giants go 6-11 or 7-10, I think you're being very generous there. If Dan Jones keeps his play around at this level, would you be okay with him coming back next year? I'm going to leave that to the decision of the next general manager,
who is hopefully not Kevin Abrams. Because if it is Kevin Abrams, then he will be here.
There you go. Someone sent a screenshot of your, is this the drive where we get the crippling Daniel Jones turnover? I don't know what that means.
I think they're trying to like make fun of me for being wrong that Dan Jones.
But you were right.
No, I wasn't.
Last week.
Week one, I was correct.
Oh, you tweeted this out yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now I got it. Oh, they're 9-16. My bad. Take that out of the podcast.
You know what? If I'm 1-for-2, I'm batting 500. That gets me.
There
the
you go. Thing. Right. So, you're 500. You got a better record than the Giants, right?
Exactly.
Not do you think, but do you want Gettleman, Judge, and Jones all tied to the hip? Oh, I like this question.
Yes.
Put it this way. Is there
no more half measures? We've been speaking about this for years. No more half measures.
I think that if Dave Gettleman goes, the decision on the head coach and the quarterback should be on the next GM. But here's the thing. I don't think it stops at the GM. I think the more I think about it, I think we need a new team president. John Mara shouldn't be running day-to-day operations of this organization. And I don't think he'll walk away from that. I think he'll forever be the, because he's so heavily involved with the NFL, he'll forever be the team president. But I think that the decision on the head coach and the quarterback should be on the GM. Do we see Barkley from his rookie year at all this season? I don't think so.
No way.
I don't think so.
No way.
No.
I mean, on top of the fact that his usage has been awful and his play itself, like, we'll see flashes. Oh, yeah. At points. My gut tells me it'll be when the game doesn't matter because defenses will be a little more laxed, maybe a little more prevent, not stacking the box. We'll see flashes. Mm-hmm. The guy's had a fucking year to rehab, but
I think that injury for running back is very tough to come back from. Actually, the mental part of it is a lot different. I was actually talking to somebody about this. He's a surgeon, and he told me, somebody that I know, a family friend, he said those type of injuries, when athletes have it, the physical part you can come back. Mentally, it's very tough to come back from. It's almost like learning to drive a car. You know, you're very hesitant in the first couple of
I can see that. Months,
you know, so it's sort of similar to that. So with the running back, where you're constantly taking hits, it's much more takes the mental side of it takes much longer to come back from than if you're a quarterback or somebody like that. So
whatever.
It's tough. Can we trade Sterling Shepard to a competent team so he has a chance to win some games? I love Sterling Shepard, but I definitely want to see him on a winning team. I think if Sterling Shepard was on a better team, he'd be talked about a lot more than what he is with the Giants. He's a very, very good receiver.
Yeah. I don't think it's outlandish to say he's like the Julian Edelman of this team.
Oh, yeah. I think maybe better.
I think that's a pretty good comparison, actually. I'll pat myself on the back for that.
Should the NFL force the New York Giants next GM like they did in the 70s with George Young? It's a good idea. I didn't think about that.
Not going to happen, but I would love it. But,
yeah. That's it, man. It's brutal.
looking at my laptop right now. Freezing cold takes, old takes exposed. Retweeted my Pat Leonard tweet.
Well, makes sense.
It does.
Atlanta. I think they're going to beat Atlanta.
Me too. I mean, they're so bad. Atlanta is so bad.
But I could also see the Giants losing that game.
Of course.
Yesterday was demoralizing for that team. Like, I don't know if they're... Like, are they mentally tough enough to overcome something like that?
The fact that we're even asking?
Like, it's 10 days before the next game, and that'll help you forget it. But I don't know if, like... This thing about just putting the game behind you and moving forward, I don't know if you can do that. It was demoralizing. Demoralizing as fuck. But I still think they pull out Atlanta. After that, your guess is as good as mine when the next win is going to come. But it looks like we're in the midst of another losing, depressing season. When it ends,
When do you start looking for draft prospects? What does the record need to be?
It's not necessarily the record. More so, it's the time.
The division.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, if you're 1-5, you know, for put it this way, if you're 4-5 games below 500, then I'm like, okay, I need to start. Let me start looking at the draft. Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm not in this boat where if the Giants are bad, like, we must draft a quarterback. I don't look at it like that. I look at it like I have to see Daniel Jones. If Daniel Jones, I don't want to put like a number on it or a
No. But here, listen, it's in my head, it's so simple. If the Giants do things the right way, okay, huge if. If the Giants do things the right way, they have a new GM, they have an entirely new coaching staff, that GM jettisons some bad contracts, and very likely, if that GM is picking top three, top four, could have multiple top five picks, that GM is going to want his own guy. Because not just for proper process, it's a selfish league. GMs, when they come in, they want to hit the reset button. Same thing with head coaches, which is why, honestly, like, Joe Judge was dealt a very raw deal. They want to hit the reset button, and they want to get tied to a guy. It extends their timeline. It gives them job security. It gives them a few years to figure it out. If the Giants do things the right way, then I do not think Daniel Jones is the quarterback next year if they have a very high draft pick.
What happens if they have a high draft pick, but
the
quarterback they like is not there?
Well, that's a different story, but they have the draft capital now to trade up. And on top of that, if Dan Jones plays like he did yesterday and the Giants are still losing, and the Giants are still losing games, or Dan Jones just isn't like totally awful, they could get another pick for him, use that pick to trade up. There's options.
His Daniel Jones situation is very similar, in my opinion, to the Sam Darnold situation, where I don't think the team has really helped him out, and I don't know if he's capable of being a franchise quarterback. And because of that, you're sort of left with this inconclusive evaluation on Daniel Jones. We know one thing, turns the ball over a lot. Right? Like, that's the one thing we know. So we can base our decision off that.
Yep.
But I think if he plays like the way he played yesterday, I think they'll win enough games where they're not in contention for a quarterback. I don't think he can play well enough to save anybody's job. I think the only way that can happen is if they make the playoffs, have a winning record and make the playoffs. But I also don't think they're going to fire Joe Judge after year two. They're committed to this.
But again, if it's a new GM, if they do things the right way outside the organization, there's a new head coach.
They'll hire a GM that has ties to Joe Judge before they fire Joe Judge.
Okay, but that's my point. Then they're not doing things the right way, and then we're fucked all over.
So you're ready to give up on Joe Judge after, what is this, game 18?
Well, that's two separate things. One, what has he proven? He has proven nothing. I have no. Like, I will not be devastated if a new GM comes in and says, no, I want my other guy. It's not like we're firing Bill Belichick or Andy Reid.
Agreed.
Like, who cares? Like, prove something to me. Make the playoffs. Right. Take this awful roster and, like, do something.
Okay.
So if the process is correct, then I am totally okay with them just jettisoning Joe Judge.
Okay, if they bring in a GM, no ties to Judge, but then says, "Hey, I want to keep this head coach around,"
then I have a hard time. Again, I have a hard time believing that is organic and legitimate. After everything that we've seen from John Mara, you cannot tell me that you would actually believe that the GM was their top choice, and that top choice said, "No, I want to come here and I want to work with Judge and not his own guy." I'm just not going to believe it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All I can say is, based on what I understand, this owner is committed to this head coach way more than me and you can imagine.
Okay. We'll have to see.
Shit would have to get really bad. Like Ben McAdoo bad.
Yeah.
For this dude to get fired. All right.
Let's wrap it up. Yes. NYG Weekly. Be back after the Falcons.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we'll do another episode. We'll TBD. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Peace.